turned right into the track, and it was mask on, temperature check, stay 2 meters apart, clean your hands, go into the media center, don't leave it. It's pretty strict.
Hello and welcome to Verge's Alternative F1 podcast. I am joined by Sam Wilson, my normal partner, one of my partners in crime. We're a man down from our normal podcast. Matt is a busy guy. He's been drumming up some new stuff for you guys. We've got a lovely, 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 lovely special guest. I've been looking forward to this. He's a big, 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 big star, as far as I'm concerned anyway. Chris Medland, for F1 Journalist. How are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. You're too kind. Far too kind.
Was that a big enough big up for you?
It was way too big. My ego can't take it. Like, big enough it is, but like... I've got to sell out the door later, so...
It's not fair. I wish you'd give me an intro like that.
We just moved past him. Yeah, okay. He would love that. He would absolutely love that.
I would. Yeah, I wouldn't fit the screen though. I'd just get bigger and bigger.
Well, before we get started and we start blitzing Chris with all of our questions, we're really, really excited to have him on. You can see how thrilled I am. We'll have a conversation about our sponsor, Natural Barber.
This is the third or fourth episode these guys have been involved. So shout out to Natural Barber Company. Dre, I know you don't know what it's like to wear hair gel, so I'll skip straight over. But I, again, wearing some Natural Barber Co. Again, thank you so much to these guys. It's, as we've said it before, it's free of synthetics and of petrochemicals and other harmful ingredients that are bad for my hair, which is how I've retained my beautiful locks in lockdown, which... are going to get shaved off soon. I'll tell you now, it's so much. It's also great. It doesn't irritate sensitive skin, which, you know, genius. And as Matt says every week, Gareth Bale always calls it out as his go-to hair product. So, Chris, you might need to get some, mate.
I need all the help I can get, so yeah.
Mate, my hairline is receding, so if I can cover it up with some gel, I'm in. Again, for our listeners, our wonderful listeners, we get a nice little offer. So if you shop now, you'll get 25% off and free next day delivery in the UK when you use the code ALTSPORT25. That's ALTSPORT25, and you can get some wonderful locks just like me. Some may not say they're wonderful, but you know. But if you visit naturalbarbco.co, you can have a browse and see what they've got. But yeah, jump in.
Your hair is amazing, luscious, lovely.
Appreciate it.
So let's get to it, because I'm excited about having Chris on this show. So Chris, first of all, thank you so much for coming on. Obviously, we know you're extremely busy and overseas as we speak at the moment.
Yeah, bunkered down in Graz. So I didn't actually think it was going to be this busy. I won't lie. I knew that F1 coming back was going to make things busier, but it's been non-stop, even though it's been very different. So yeah, I'm in Austria at the moment. Got to stay here. Got to be sensible where I go and who I get sort of interacting with to make sure that I don't pick anything up. But yeah, it's good to be back racing.
So I mean, how was it? How was the experience? First of all, being over there in such different conditions.
Yeah, it was weird. Like traveling here was really strange. I've barely left the same house for 12 weeks, and then suddenly it was. Get yourself to an airport. So I got a lift there, that was fine. But then you get to the airport and the checks are weird, the queues are weird, everything's shut. And it just all took so long. Everyone's like staying 2 meters apart and things. And it was like, okay, this is very, very strange, like a ghost town. And then there was two flights leaving Heathrow when I was coming out. It was 9 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. And they were both scheduled to go from gates next to each other. And they were both full. So you had only two flights worth of people in the whole terminal, so it was nice and easily evenly spaced out, and then suddenly they're all crammed together and you just get on the plane as if nothing's different. You have to wear your face masks the whole time, but you're crammed in. It just feels very strange. So that was interesting. It was good. Flew to Munich first to come here. Wasn't intentional, but the flight before got cancelled. The day before had a direct flight and it got cancelled 24 hours before I meant to leave, so everything changed last minute, a bit of a panic. And got to Munich airport, and you could get a beer in a pint glass in the airport while working, and that was just a dream that I have not experienced for a long time. So Yeah, it kind of, it got better. Once you got to Vienna, and we stayed in an airport hotel, everything was a bit more normal, drove down to the circuit. And that's when you did notice that, yeah, here in this country, everything's a lot more normal. So F1's treating it very differently, but the country itself is out of lockdown, basically. And
everyone's just getting along as normal.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's quite fun, because when you are outside, you feel a bit more relaxed. You have to still be careful, but yeah, you do feel more relaxed. So yeah, it's been one of those where the difference between inside and outside the circuit and not is just huge. And we pulled into it Saturday morning, driving in was the big noticeable one. Everyone was going around their daily lives, like running, jogging, cycling. Lots of people around near the circuit just being normal. Turned right into the track and it was mask on, temperature check, stay 2 meters apart, clean your hands, go into the media center, don't leave it. It's pretty strict.
So you know, obviously we're speaking off air and you was just scaring me with the fact that you guys have to be tested so much, obviously for obvious good reasons, and we're glad that you're healthy and safe. But just explain to me, I'm going to get my pillow and hide behind it, about the whole process of being tested.
It is grim. So on Monday at Silverstone, before flying out for the first race, I had to go up to a little porter cabin, and they have two separate swabs, and they just take the first one, and with the same swab, they do the back of your throat, so far that you just about gag. Everyone's ready for this. I was fine. I didn't quite gag, but I was fine. And it's like uncomfortable-ish, but it's not that bad. It doesn't take very long. But apparently one person that weekend had thrown up at this point because it had been far enough. Yeah. But then with the same swab, right, they go up.
Same, right, hold on a second. The same swab.
Same swab. So they've just done your throat with. Goes up your right nostril. Right. And just goes further than you thought anything could. It goes past the bridge of your nose. So it's not actually that far if you measure your own nose, but it's you feel it, and you're like you get to the point where you're like, this is horrible, and it comes out, you're like, oh Jesus, and your eyes start to water. Then they do the same with your other side, your left nostril, which for me hurt.
That was both sides.
The right was okay. Yeah, they do both, not just that, they then do both sides again. Actually, no, they did the whole process again. That was what the second swab was for. They do the whole thing again so that they've got two samples. And yeah, the second one is when you're like, oh. So that was interesting for me. One side actually drew blood. Because I used to be susceptible to nosebleeds anyway, so yeah, that was fun. But it wasn't particularly nice, but you're like, okay, got it done. And then when you got out here, there was quite a few horror stories that the people doing the testing out here were even more brutal, that they weren't quite so gentle. But it's different here. They just do one swab of the back of your throat and up one nostril once, and that's it. And I had someone who was lovely on. I went on Saturday, so when I got tested on Monday, they said the latest I could be tested was Saturday, which then meant the latest I could be tested again is Thursday. And you're trying to time it when you're going to be at the track and things like that, for like the logistics, basically, to make it easiest. So I was in again on Saturday and got it done. And it was a dream. That was the best. That was the highlight of my day, actually, because I got to walk to the testing center and it was near the entrance to the paddock. So it was the closest I got to go to the paddock this week. And I timed it with the start of FP3 so I could hear some cars. And I genuinely was like, this is all right.
You've got more man points than me, right? Because I would have been one of those guys that would have just fainted. Or I would have been like, you know what? I love the sport, but not that much.
I was going to say, that would be my notice going in. Like, you know, I'll come back in a couple of months when we're back to normal. That's giving me goosebumps. It's nasty. I saw Checo's video on Twitter and I was like, that doesn't look fun, if I'm honest. That really doesn't look fun. But the fact that they've done it so much, oh mate, I feel for you. I'm really glad that you're going out and giving us all this great coverage instead of us having to go get our own nose swabs, because like yeah, I'm out of that. I was gonna ask, my next question was there any standout moments from the weekend? But I think that might be it.
Oh, big time. Yeah, it's huge.
Really, I mean, it was an amazing race, obviously. I watched it twice. I watched the Sky Sports coverage and then I watched the Channel 4 coverage afterwards. But it was probably one of the best races we've seen since Germany last year in the wet. What was it like covering it? I mean, I know you're in the media center, so you weren't in the grandstand watching it or anything like that, but still, I mean, you're back at a track.
Yeah, that helped. I mean, there was quite a few times during the weekend where you thought, why am I here? Because you have so little access. For me, because I do, I host the press conferences for Formula 2 and Formula 3. So that was the one other time I was allowed to leave the media centre. And because there's no way of doing that remotely, I had to be there for that. But for anything else, you could have done it remotely. But then in the build-up to the race, it got exciting when we had the protest from Red Bull about Saturday's incident with Lewis in qualifying. And we're waiting for results. And we could look down on the grid from the media centre and you saw the Mercedes mechanics go to fifth place and Verstappen's to second. And they were like talking to each other and telling them where to go. And you're like, this is strange because we hadn't had an announcement at that point. So that was quite cool. And that was one of those little moments where you're like, oh, if I wasn't here, I wouldn't see that.
Yeah.
And you could tell people because it wasn't being shown on telly. And then, yeah, the race started. It all felt totally normal. It was great. You don't really notice the lack of fans because the cars make enough noise, so you don't notice that the atmosphere isn't there. You do at the end, and you do with the fact that you couldn't go on the grid and the grid was quieter, that sort of thing. That looked a bit strange. But yeah, as soon as the lights went out, it was actually just great to get lost in a race again and get really hyped up by what was going on. So I just don't think I was prepared for it. It's been a weird weekend of sussing things out, what you got to do that's different, and responding to everything that we're kind of asked to do or told not to do. And yeah, then to have a bonkers race that all came together at the end as well, like, you know, the way it finished, and have to react to it all, you're just suddenly like, oh, I'm out of practice, I haven't done this for 7 months. So it was like, what do I do, make some notes. And yeah, I was a little bit rusty, so it was a late finish, but really, really enjoyed the race.
I don't think I was, don't get me wrong, I love a bit of reliability issues. I love it because it really throws a spanner in the works. Like Charles's Bahrain race, that was one of those moments where you're like, oh wow, like if that, you know, that's one of those moments where you just can't predict it. But to have that many retirements in one race was shocking. I felt for Max, like you could see him trying to bump start his car, and I think that's it was pretty intense. And I think so, like Albon's move, and again the same thing with Lewis and resulting in that penalty, it was literally textbook Brazil, wasn't it? Like it was basically exactly the same. Do you feel like it was a warranted penalty? Or
I do actually, and it's a weird one because Lewis is normally quite good at coming out and saying when he thinks he deserves it and when he doesn't, and he accepted it but also said he didn't think he deserved it, if that makes sense. Whereas in Brazil he was like, yeah, it's all my fault.
Yeah.
And I think he underestimated how well Alex was going to pull that move off. I think he thought he was going to be able to run Alex out of the road and not have to concede, and he was going to have the high ground, but Alex got it. And then I think he just basically he wanted to fight Alex hard on the exit.
Yeah.
And admittedly, Alex could have left probably a little bit more room as well, but like Lewis did have to kind of yield by that stage. And I just think he probably, only slightly, but as he accelerated out of the corner, as it opened up, old tyres, understeer, like it was very marginal. But I do think really, and I'm not saying I'd have done it. Like no racing driver's ever going to give up the corner. But really, he needed to admit defeat at that point in the corner that he was beaten. But yeah, I do think just, and especially because obviously Lewis then just carried on, no problem.
Yeah.
And that completely ruined Alex's race. If that had just been like a nudge and Alex had dropped back behind him again and they carried on and he'd had another go, then you go, okay, that was marginal enough that we can let it slide. But it did ruin one driver's race. So I kind of felt it was, in that sense, only 5 seconds, not the worst penalty in the world.
No, from my perspective, I think the move was done and the racing line wasn't given over to the person that completed the move. And that, in my head, is the crux of it. And I think it was a right call. It was a right call. So based on the race this weekend and based on how good Austria turned out to be, I know it's always a great race, as was last year, but this year has been amazing. How excited are you for next week?
I'm thinking all the testing.
That's
I tell you, like Thursday back for that. I'm a little bit, I'd say, from a personal point of view, like it's not going to be a thrilling weekend because having been through it once, and it was unique last week, but next week it's just going to be really restricted and kind of frustrating not to be able to do your job properly, but still with a hell of a view, which I can't complain at. Like you can see the whole track basically. So And I would rather still be there than not. Obviously, I'm not complaining in that sense. But yeah, when you're kind of used to being able to, you know, dig into stories and go and interview people and ask, you know, interaction is a huge thing of this job. To just be tied to your desk, literally tied to your desk, not allowed to leave the room, and only be able to do video calls along with anyone else, so you could do it from home, is a little bit frustrating. You still feel very detached from it, which is, I don't know, just as someone who's got used to not being detached from it, I'm struggling with that. But the racing was great. I do think it'll be as good, if not better, next week. I think one of the things that Mercedes is very good at is maximising their car, or getting very close to the maximum of their car from the word go. And I don't think Merck are going to pull any further clear of anyone if it's identical conditions. I think more likely people are going to come a little bit closer to them. But and I'd like to see what Red Bull can do with a clean weekend. We didn't find that out. But the flip side is, it looks like it might be wet. So if it rains, it's going to be brilliant.
You touched on Red Bull there. Like, they have a week to fix electrical problems, and they're not able to get back to the factory, or get, you know, it's not going to be easy for them to get parts out. Do you reckon that's going to factor into their weekend? Do you reckon they'll get it sorted? Or
yeah, they'll get it sorted. Don't forget they're on the circuit. And they basically run the whole region. They'll get stuff there if they need to. But also, I don't actually think the way, I don't know about Albon's issue, but I think with Max's issue, I think that's one that basically needs rectifying, because it was an operational one. So I don't think, I'm not certain, but I don't think too much damage was actually done to the engine with that. I think they'll probably be okay to kind of just change some software settings and go again. And the teams are limited in what they're allowed to do, and Honda are limited in upgrades and stuff. The engine manufacturers can't do performance upgrades this year, but they can do reliability ones. So if there's a quick fix that needs doing, they'll be allowed to do it. I think they'll be okay. I mean, they're still massive teams, and from the second Max slowed on Sunday, there'll have been a whole army of people back in Milton Keynes trying to sort it out. So probably by now they've got it fixed already.
Fair point.
It must be. One of the things that I'm sure you notice as well, the difference is that because obviously you've got so many people moving around, you know, there's, you know, a situation, for example, when Daniel Ricciardo, when the car yet again messed up, and normally you would see him like looking pissed, angry, but I felt like this time he's like, oh, okay. And he pretty much was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna have to deal with this for too much longer. And then, but on the other side, you had, the McLaren versus Ferrari at one point, and you're looking at, you know, a new incumbent racing the number one driver, and you're thinking, okay, well, you know, you can't go too far. You know, what was your take on those duels?
Yeah, it was quite interesting, actually, the way some of them played out. I mean, yeah, Ricciardo was a little bit too early out of the game. And Renault just didn't look to be quite on it this weekend. I think we expected a little bit more from them. We didn't really get to see him race anyone hard enough for long enough. It would be good to have him in the kind of final fight that we had in the final laps. The Vettel, I actually found the Vettel move really strange. I've seen an onboard of his car from early in the race, and the car looks like an absolute dog. It looks awful. I'm amazed he didn't come out and just say how bad it was. So it's not really a surprise that at some point there was a mistake. But he did really seem to misjudge it. I don't think he was actually... I kind of feel like he outbraked himself enough that he thought the only thing I can do is try and throw this down the inside and see if I get away with it. I think he'd made an error there. But that was, I think, it was just ironic that it was against Carlos. But he must have been sat behind it watching Carlos and Charles fighting and being like, these are the future, basically, of this sport. And apparently I'm past it. And he would have wanted to prove a point. So, maybe that's where that move came from. I'm not sure, because
it was unnecessary, wasn't it? It was like, okay, you could have just let them go at it. And he decided, it seemed like he had a point to prove. Like, I'm going to show you two. You know, I want to get involved as well.
It felt almost...
The door wasn't really open.
Yeah. It felt almost that he was trying to come in with a final kind of, I can do moves where I can take two at one in one corner, on a corner that's not easy to overtake on. Yeah. And what I'm going to do is go up the inside on the apex of both of you and turn around and go like, and it just didn't work.
I think he was hoping it would all kick off between them, and he was going to pick up the pieces, and it might have a bit further down, but he picked a point too early where I think Charles had held Carlos off, and Carlos was just kind of giving it up, and that fight was just about to end, and he was suddenly like, oh, I'll give it a go. So yeah, it was not a smart move, but at the same time, when you've got a bad car, which is that Ferrari right now is a bad car, you overdrive. Like, you have to, if you're trying to get any position, you're pushing the car beyond its limits. So it's a new scenario in a sense. I mean, the Ferrari hasn't been the best car for a while, but and we see mistakes from Vettel when he does overdrive, and I think that was another one of those.
Yeah, agreed.
So I was just lastly on the subject of obviously how it affects your job. So just for those who don't know, obviously you can step into your very, very lucky shoes. We would all love to be there. Well, except for the testing, I wouldn't want to deal with that. But I can't get over that. But like on a normal race, like, you know, no restriction, no COVID, what would your day be like? What would you be able to do that you're not allowed, that you're not able to do now?
So if we went for a Saturday, actually, a normal Saturday or Sunday, I would be from the morning, you'd go into the paddock straight away. You'd probably drop your stuff off in the media centre, but go into the paddock, talk to some people, get a steer on, you know, how their Friday went, how their qualifying's going to go, what they need to work on in practice, just chat to a few different team members. And you don't just pick out randomers. Obviously, these are people that over time you've kind of made friends with and stuff. I would have been up in the media centre to watch the final practice session, back down into the paddock beforehand to get, again, some feedback, because then I do TV punditry for a Middle East TV channel. So it would be to gather as much information as you can, and then we'd go live on air somewhere in the paddock normally, or even in the pit lane, you can move around the two. And you'd be walking around showing what's going on in the garages, showing, you know, who's in the paddock, grabbing some interviews. And then I'd go to the TV pen, which is also based in the paddock, stand there and watch qualifying, interview the drivers as they get knocked out. So like you see, like Rachel Brooks do, or anyone from Sky, as they sort of cycle through all the drivers. So I'd be doing that. And then once qualifying was over, you get media sessions that usually are held in each team motorhome. So you're sat with the driver, you know, group of journalists asking questions directly. And then I'd have to run off to watch Formula 2. I usually used to pick McLaren all the time because they'd have the commentary on, which is very good of them. I'd sit in the McLaren motorhome, watch the F2 race with my laptop, making a load of the notes, listening to the commentary, stealing a cup of coffee and hot chocolate, whatever they've got in there. And then as soon as that would finish, run back across to the press conference room and host that press conference. And after that, normally they sit down and start writing news reaction pieces about what's been said all day. So the first time I would actually sit and stay in the media centre to write in terms of articles, unless news broke earlier in the day, would be sort of late in the afternoon. And you've done all your gathering and talking and getting that extra bit of insight that being there allows you to get during the day. So, yeah, none of that now. It's just go straight in, sit down and watch it on TV.
Stay there.
Yeah. It hurts. I'll tell you, genuinely, like, because you see TV pictures as well. The TV crews are still there, but NBC, who I work for, because they're still uncertain of the situation and it all came together very late. They're doing it from their studios in Dubai, which I think is a sensible call, to be fair. Yeah. There's very little added stuff you get here. But if they'd have been here and they'd asked me to do the TV stuff, I then wouldn't be allowed in the media center because you're not allowed to cross the divide at the moment. So it's made things very tricky, but it's needs must. And the main thing that I did like is that nobody knows anything different once the lights went out. Like, we put on a race, people got excited, and most people still just tune in from 5 minutes before till 5 minutes after. Maybe they'll watch the podium and hear a few interviews, and then they're happy. And that section of the day was mega, I thought.
So it actually kind of tests your skills. It's like you're almost going back to the basics when you first started, when you didn't get as much access because you had to, you know, really use your all the experience that you've had and, you know, everything that you've learned. Probably you learned, you probably thought, okay, well, wow, God, I've come a long way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's good about this is no one else is getting anything more than I'm getting, if that makes sense. So yeah. I'd be very, there's plenty of guys that aren't here that would have wanted to be here and didn't get invited to these ones because of the limitations. And the plan is to cycle through. So I probably won't be at the fourth, fifth and sixth races at Silverstone and Barcelona because they'll have different media that they invite to that if the restrictions are still the same. I'd be like at home, I'd be really annoyed because even though it's not a lot of value being here, it's still that little bit more. And it's that almost that kudos of, you know, I am here. I am watching it out the window. I am, you know, just because you try and make the teams aware as well. You want the drivers to know you're there because you're kind of all in it together in that sense. Mm-hmm. Then, And I have found that with like the F2 and F3 guys, when you talk to them doing our press conferences, and they're kind of asking what you're doing differently, where you're staying, what you're having to do your job safely. It's all quite interesting. So, you do revert back a bit to what it was like when I first got in, and I was sat behind the computer in an office doing the same job. But the difference then was other people were running around on site reporting things, and you were kind of picking things up from them, but also just wishing you were there. This way around, it's like, oh, well, no one's getting to do that. So it's just kind of a bit strange. But at least I don't feel disadvantaged as such. It's just not a great situation to be in.
So let's actually, as we're talking about, you know, when you first started, let's go all the way back, to the days, because there's going to be lots of people who are looking to be journalists in the future who want to, you know, step into your shoes. Not anytime soon, kids.
Hope not.
At some point. With this rate, we all got to watch our back, actually. Tell me about like the steps. How you got into actual journalism? You know, I read somewhere that you blagged your way into Silverstone.
Yeah, so basically I was one of these kids who just wanted to be a professional footballer when he grew up, or a professional racing driver, but I didn't get to go karting very often when I was young, and I wasn't particularly good as a kid. But I was smart enough to work out from a young age that I was not going to make it as a professional sportsman. So I didn't have that dream that I chased until 16 or something. But I thought, well, what would be the next best thing to do for a job? And I thought, to be paid to watch sport. I'd love that, because I watched everything that was on telly, and always wanted to tell my mates about it first. So I was like, well, like sports journalism, then you get to go and watch these events, travel around the world following them. Like, maybe I should do that. So I just looked into it, thought it looked cool, did all my GCSEs and A levels that chased that, and then went to uni and did a sports journalism degree. And it makes it sound so easy, but it was like, yeah, that's what I thought I wanted to do, and just kept working at it. And the closer I got, the more I was like, yeah, this is cool. So I got to the end of my first year of uni. The course was great. It was one of only two unis at the time, the University of Central Lancashire in Preston. It's one of only two places at the time doing a sports journalism course specifically. And the end of the first year, which hadn't been all that tough, so you'd had spare time to plan things, you obviously get a massive summer at uni. And I was like, I want to go and get some experience. So I wrote to the national press officer at the British Grand Prix, a guy called John Horton, who he's not with us anymore, sadly. But I said to him, look, can I come and shadow you? I want to know how the media centre works. Hopefully one day I'll be a journalist. I want to know what journalists have to do, but I want to know their working conditions. I want to know like what you guys offer them. I just kind of want to get a whole picture of the whole sort of system. And he emailed back and went, what do you mean by shadow? You can't follow me around like a dog, but you can come and work for free if you want. So first I was like, yeah, that sounded like a stupid thing. I was like, I just want to follow you around and watch. So I was like, great, yeah, I'll do it. And they gave me a single bed in essentially a boardroom of an old country house, which is where the whole media services team stayed. They just found a way of putting me up. Got free breakfast there. You would get up at 5 a.m, have a full English at 5, and drive into the track for 5:36 before any journalists came in. And you'd be there till 9, 10 o'clock at night. But you get back, dinner, drinks, bed, do it all again. And it was an absolute blast. Got me into the paddock for the first time. Genuinely, I drove in. It's the old Silverstone paddock. I had a Citroen Saxo with a red one with a spoiler. I hadn't put it on it. And the Saxo decal on the back as well. Yeah. It was a really chubby looking car. It had a proper stainless steel exhaust on it when I bought it, and I turned it off. It was just too loud.
Was it a VX car? The VTS?
No, no.
Yes, isn't it?
No, it was a Mischief. It was a 1.1 litre Mischief, and someone had done it up. And it had private number plates that said Jessica's Saxo. Which I left on it, because I was like, if I annoy anyone and they want to like key my car, they'll see this one that says Jessica Saxo and be like, oh, I can't be that one. So I left it on, and the car was called Jessica. Anyway, so I took this car to Silverstone. I didn't know where I was going, kept asking questions. It was the Monday before the race, and I drove into the paddock. Like, the gates were open for you to drive in there, and I was told to go in there and told just to park up and where I needed to go upstairs. And what they'd done is, where there used to be parking spaces, they kind of blacked them out with paint, to sort of match the tarmac, but you could still see them. So I parked in one, and went upstairs and said, I'm here. And they're like, oh, great, where have you parked? And so I was just downstairs. I was told just to park down near the door. And I'm like, oh, whereabouts? And looked out the window, and they all started laughing. And I backed up to the door of Bernie Eccleston's motorhome so that you could not open the door. Like, obviously, he wasn't there. It was the Monday before the race, and I had no idea whose it was and what it was doing there. But yeah, I I would have basically locked him in his own motorhome if he was there that early. So that was my introduction to the F1 paddock. And it's been a little bit easier ever since. So I did that every year for 3 years, completed my degree, did an internship at Bauer Media, which involved working at FHM unpaid, but a lot of fun. And that moved me to London and got me experience with a big company working on websites and things. And then after 2 months of freelancing with them for free, an assistant editor job at ESPN F1 opened up. I was in the right place, right time, had the experience and got the job and sort of worked my way up from there, really.
So what, I mean, we spoke to Ben Hunt on the show, who's a very good friend of yours. We know you two, and that's how we met, actually. What's it like traveling the world? I mean, at the moment it's very different because you're there for basically 2 and a bit weeks or how 3 weeks or however long it is. You know, you're not coming home in between races and stuff, but it's different because as you say, you've gone from a job at FHM as a free intern. I don't know what you were writing at FHM, but you've gone from that to, you know, straight up from to ESPN, and I'm pretty sure, straight after that, you probably started going to races and such. But what's it like now to be, as you say, a freelancer who, as I'm sure some people that watch this show may not be aware, freelancers probably have a lot less time than normal journalists because they're doing so many different things for so many different publications. But you're constantly traveling the world. You're constantly writing for multiple different media publications. What is that like? How much of an impact does that have on your life? Do you enjoy it? What the bits you hate, the bits you love?
It's funny you ask this, genuinely, because I did a podcast sometime last year and I was single at the time. And I said, and they were like, oh, you know, what's it like? And I was like, it's great. Like, I stay out. Like, if there'd be a run of races like this, I'd be like, yeah, I'd stay out. I'd get a night train to the next race. I did that at one point from the French GP to this race last year with a friend of mine. We got a train to Milan and then a night train to Vienna. You can work on the train, but you can have a few beers. And it was just great fun. And you just try and make little moments in between the races as exciting and as fun as you can, because you need those releases. Now I'm no longer single. I can't give that answer anymore. I'm not allowed. So I have to say, no, but genuinely, it's tougher. It was tougher leaving for this. Having been in lockdown for 12 weeks and then being told you're going to be away from home for 3, and you've got very used to seeing people that you care about. So that side of it's tough. But then the flip side is the energy you get from doing this job is very cool. So being on site, being reacting to stuff, it is really tiring. You're right. I work really long days. Ben keeps complaining about it. I've got the nickname Many Jobs because as a freelancer, you really can't afford to turn down work. And they're not all glamorous jobs. Some are very small little things, but they're time consuming. But it's still, you know, you're still getting paid to do something around Formula One. So it's great. But you need to piece it all together to make sure that you're getting a good income. And obviously, the more you can do and the better you can do it, the more money you can make from it. So it can be very profitable, but you do need to make sure you don't bite off more than you can chew and end up it all falls apart. So it's quite a tough balance at times. But what I think of is when you do come out of here is you are still doing a job. And while a lot of people prior to the pandemic were going into an office and doing a job, mm-hmm. and I don't think anyone was really doing 9 to 5 anymore either. Most people were doing 8 to 6 or whatever. Yeah. And when they go to work, they don't go there and go, oh, I want to do this or I want to do that. That's fun. Some people do lose sight when they come to races and go, oh, I don't want to work because, you know, Graz looks like a fun city to go and explore, or Budapest is amazing. And I, you know, so annoyed I'm working right now. It's like, yeah, but first and foremost, you're here because of that job. So you've got to do the job properly. So it can be draining. It can be tiring, but it brings great perks usually. Great way to see the world. Great. I mean, as we say, like Sunday, when you realize that you're talking to people and you have a long, long day, you're shattered at the end of it, but you just look back at the reaction from fans at an amazing event and you think, oh, I'm a part of that. You know, I get paid to write about that or talk about that. It is proper like dream job scenario. So yeah, the work side is usually very good, just very long days. I was saying off air before we started, I've done about a 10-hour day so far today, just sat in my hotel room in Graz. Because the first day after the race, yeah, a lot to cover and a lot of different outlets that want stuff. But even then, you're still talking about something that's your passion and you're writing about things that you've learned or that you know about. So it's definitely not something I ever complain about, how hard you have to work. And the harder you work, normally it means the time passes quicker. So when you do want to get home in between, then it's coming a bit more quickly. But yeah, this sort of time, I think probably what I would have done if life was normal would have been last night or early this morning, I would have flown back to the UK. And I would have been able to be there till Thursday and then come back out for the next race. or because we weren't meant to have any triple headers, so then you probably would have done two in one go and then gone home and that sort of thing, and try and get that balance. But even then, even when that tires you out, it's the little things. Like, you wake up the next day and go, yesterday I was in Vienna, because I've just covered the Austrian Grand Prix, and today I'm back home. That those sorts of little moments are ones you kind of have to hold on to and remind yourself how cool it is to do what we get to do.
Yeah, it sounds sick, man. I'm jealous.
Yeah, sorry.
It's a lot of work. I mean, I'd say, Chris, you've had to grind your way, to where you are. It's not just been given to you. You've put in a lot of work, obviously, what you've been saying.
I'd like to think so, yeah. Like, unpaid internship that I did at FHM, I then balanced that. So, another summer job I had at uni, at the end of my first year of uni, I did the 2008 Beijing Olympics. I worked on that for the BBC because they wanted temporary staff, basically students, that would come and sit and just type into a machine what you were seeing on screen from any single event. So it was called logging, TV logging. And essentially, it would mean if any producers wanted a wide shot of a stadium, or they wanted a close-up of a certain athlete at a certain event, whatever, you'd made a note that at this time, this shot happened, and you kind of time-coded the whole thing. So you were being paid to watch it, but it was quite, boring work, but it was very well paid. Anyway, that got me in the BBC, and the exec producer working on that turned out to be the exec producer that worked on MotoGP for the BBC. Mm. And the following year, they got the F1 rights. So I'd made it clear while I was doing this job that I liked F1, and they called me back the following year to do the second half of the F1 season, doing the same job. But through that, then I got other bits of ad hoc work. I was doing logging for football, and all you're doing is sitting in the dark room with screens on, showing you that sport happening, and you're inputting what's happening on screen, not reporting on it, but just the technical side of it into this program. But it's still a great way to watch the games and stuff. It was a fun job to do. So I did that as my full-time job outside the full-time unpaid job. So I'd go straight from FHM to White City and work most evenings, Saturday and Sunday at the weekends. So, I mean, I'd have been sat in a pub watching it anyway, like match of the day. I was working on that. So it wasn't actually that difficult. But yeah, it was a two-job thing to sustain doing the unpaid part. So I was lucky with the timing, I think, of the ESPN gig opening up. Because if that hadn't come along when it did, then I think that next year would have been really difficult. So there is definitely an element of luck too, but you've just got to work as hard as you can to put yourself in a position to take advantage of it, I think.
And you created your own luck as well, to be honest with you. So, kudos to you, definitely. What's your team? Obviously, I heard you mention football. I can't resist.
You'll laugh though. So I'm not going to offend anyone because it's Yeovil Town.
No, that's fine. As long as it's not Man United, because that's where this interview would end.
it's currently a non-league team. We went down.
You're a real fan.
The championship. 4 or 5 years ago, yeah, we're in the championship, and we went down. We somehow got up there, and we're a tiny little club, my local club, and then we've gone down, and we got relegated last season into the National League again, which it took us 113 years to get out of, and then we only had 16 years out of it, and we're back. but we're in the playoffs that they're just restarting, so I'll get to watch them hopefully on BT Sport if a VPN will work. Because that's downside of this job, actually. Travelling, missing sporting events, pay a fortune for all the TV coverage, and then they're like, no, you can't watch that in your territory. I tried to watch NASCAR last night, which I'd signed up to specifically during lockdown, and they're like, you can't watch this in Austria. I'm like, I'm paying for this service. So, anyway.
Yeah, that providers.
Get off my chest.
You heard it here first. That's how you fix the world.
Get them gripes in. You have to get them out. So obviously, with everything that's happening in the world, obviously it's changing for the better. Obviously, people are more aware of other people's plights and other people's sufferings in this world. And obviously, Lewis Hamilton has really taken, from a Formula One point of view, that matter on his back, and he really wants to push for change. I mean, you've been really vocal in your support for Lewis. Yeah, how do you think the steps that are put in place now from F1 for younger people, do you think it's going to make a difference?
I certainly hope so. I'd say one thing I kind of would hope to make clear is that it's not just support for Lewis. Lewis is the most outspoken. I've been really impressed with the way he's gone about certain things. But it is support for that movement and for the push to make things better, because I'm very aware that as a getting close to middle age now, but not quite middle aged, white British male, working Formula One is so much easier for me than for anyone else. I've had the dream ticket in that sense, and I can see how it's harder for others. So like, my girlfriend works in motorsport too, and it's not as easy for her to get to where I am. And at certain times, you know, there's almost tokenism at the wrong time, and there's barriers at the wrong time too. And it's not an even playing field. And it needs to be as much as we can make it. And I'm glad the conversation's being had. And Lewis has been great at kind of pushing it from not only an ending racism point of view, but he does mention as well diversity and equality and inclusion across the board. So, it's just resonated with me, which is one of the reasons I do agree with it. But then other drivers have said other things, even when they've like disagreed this weekend at times about whether they wanted to take a knee specifically. But they still were saying, look, there's things I want to say and there's change I want to make happen. Then I've also agreed with that. So I've just been pleased to see how widespread there's been a movement that seems to be building momentum within F1. And I've been really impressed with the younger drivers speaking out, having a voice when it would be, even I thought, when Lewis called on F1 to basically do more and to speak up, I thought, no, what do I say? Should I be saying anything? Should I not be saying something? Should I be just promoting what he says? And I didn't say anything at the time because I didn't really know how to word it. And I was also like, it's not about me. So I don't want to suddenly jump on a bandwagon. But then I saw some of these young drivers do it and felt like they bravely did it and thought, fair play. These guys are 10 years younger than me, even more in some of their cases. And they put it so well, so succinctly. They didn't have their PR teams around them. But, you know, they're in isolation. I was really impressed by that. And that gives me hope that it's actually is going to move in the right direction, because the biggest stars and the future stars have this attitude and have the right attitude. It's been good to see that money's been put in as well, like Chase Carey putting in $1 million of his own money to try and open up some opportunities. In a sense, it's a small step. It's a lot of money, but it's just to do some internships. And obviously that just won't automatically mean everything's better. But lots of small steps are what are needed, in my view. And I feel like F1 has started doing that. It definitely opened up a conversation within the sport that it maybe didn't need to. Wouldn't have in the past quite as freely. And I think it's been helped by other sports doing the same. The fact that other sports have started before and done stuff, NASCAR being very proactive, you could argue not having fans around has helped that, but so what? They took advantage of that situation and have been really impressive. And I think F1 has thought, we need to be doing it too. And the more sports that do it, the momentum builds, and I do think we're going to see genuine change.
Yeah, I think I agree with you massively. And I think F1 especially, I think, is one of the only sports bar NASCAR that I know of that's really taking it. And instead of saying, we're going to kind of agree and follow the path, they've kind of put their foot out and said, no, we're going to kick the door in first. Like the fact that they put time aside before the national anthem to allow drivers who wanted to take the knee to take the knee. So NFL, if you go back, 5 years, when Kaepernick took a knee, he's not played an NFL game and a season since. You know, he even had to put a lawsuit against NFL. So, you know, and it's just the way that Formula One have moved it forward, I agree, is massive. I also agree with, you know, obviously NFL have come out and they've very much rectified those wrongs, which is incredible to see. And they've done the right thing. And I think what NASCAR have done, you know, even just getting rid of the Confederate flag, it's such a small gesture, but it means so much to a lot of people. So I think, yeah, you're right. Like those small changes. And we did an episode on this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm very much in your position, Chris. I'm a very English white guy from, you know, a pretty standard background. I haven't been through anything massively tough in my life. So I could, if I had credentials and I could go into an office and say I'm a journalist, I could probably get into an F1 paddock without too much, you know, difficulty. Whereas as you said, you had on your podcast the other day, Sam Collins, who you know talked about this before, like being a journalist, you know, color in an F1 paddock must be quite strange because you are the only one. It's got to be lonely. You've got to think if a journalist is feeling that, then Lewis is going to definitely feel that as the only black driver on the grid and the only black driver in history to compete in a race. Obviously, we had Willie T. Ribbs that was testing back in, I think it was a Brabham, but to be the only driver, that's a lonely thing. And I think the one thing I was really happy to see on Sunday was that, you know, whether some of these, I know not everyone took the knee and that's, you know, that's the personal decision. I think that's okay. But I think there's a lot of drivers there that may not necessarily have understood as much as Lewis does, obviously being a black man in the sport, but they took that knee to be there and support him for it and support the goal of what the issue is and, you know, ending racism. So as a sport, I kind of sat there on the sofa back in London, unfortunately not in Austria. But I watched that and I thought, actually, as a moment within our sport, that's pretty prominent and that's pretty pertinent to something that's, especially, you know, the way the news covered it as well. It was important that that stance was made, I think.
Yeah, it's something that I was impressed with. Also, the fact that there was debates before, and it did sound like Lewis actually said on the Saturday after qualifying that the driver briefing had been interesting, and the tone he used told me he's not too happy here, and that there was kind of a lack of unity between the drivers about what they were going to do, and that's how he seemed to sort of suggest it. But then by the end of Sunday, it's kind of clear that no, the point we need to focus on, and that Lewis did emphasize himself by the end of the day, was they were having this talk, they were having this debate, they were discussing such an important matter in the driver briefing. A lot of them were going to take a knee, some weren't, but they were explaining why not. Lewis was explaining why he felt they should, or the sort of things that they maybe don't know yet. But all of them were talking about how they've been educating themselves or trying to learn, or and they had reasons. There was no one that was being ignorant, and I felt that was a really good step as well. So that was more encouraging to see. But I mean, Andre, we were saying about it beforehand, like there's also different ways you can, like, people are going to interpret things. And there were the way that maybe gestures that were made, like Charles Leclerc, like getting his t-shirt afterwards, but then Valtteri and Lando kneeling again. And what was good to see, I felt, was just that everyone did something, even if it was very small. It was a very small step in the right direction compared to no step in the right direction. And okay, we want to encourage bigger ones, because we need to actually make change rather than just make gestures. But it was good to see that everyone on that grid was making a step in a direction that is positive.
I mean, one thing I definitely want to add before we move on from this is I just want to say a well done to Formula One in particular, because to be honest with you, they've started this process from last year. As we were discussing off air, they gave us access, or me in particular, to, you know, the highest level, racer drivers, gave me access to everything, that things that money can't buy. And then they did this from last year. Even when we came back from the Super Bowl, we was at the launch of the new Drive to Survive series, and we got access to speaking to Lando and Carlos as well. And like, literally, these are things that, and also Hülkenberg, Sam's favorite. We got to speak to all of these guys, and obviously we've been at dinner, we've been treated equally with the rest of the journalists as well. So, to be honest with you, I think that from my point of view, and I hope that Formula One are listening, because we don't partner with them, we're completely independent, and they've really been inclusive to us. I just want to say, like, congratulations to them, because they've been walking the walk for a longer time before this was actual issue. So anyone who thinks that they're just jumping on the bandwagon, because I see a lot of the ignorant comments from some of the fans who really, to be honest with you, some people you just cannot educate. There are platforms that a massive platform of, we spoke about this in our special about this, who actually, the biggest platform, bar obviously Sky and obviously us, did nothing, actually just avoided the situation, didn't want to talk about it at all, which is part of the problem. But I would say Formula One and especially, standout teams, obviously Mercedes and McLaren in particular, they've been amazing and very inclusive and they're not treating us differently, or having us come to a garage or give us a tour because we're, minority media or anything like that. Literally just treated everyone the same. And, I'd say Formula One have definitely been, walking the walk for a long time. But just lastly on this, do you think that this has actually opened this up to younger generation, a new demographic, people from more diverse backgrounds to be able to get involved in the sport?
I'd hope so, because I think we've seen, there has been, as you say about comments, you do see the backlash you get sometimes when you tweet something or when there's a story that comes up, and there does seem to be a largely certain demographics or ages that seem to be the ones that are not quite yet grasping it. And they're not always, you know, it's not always a negative thing, actually. It's just that lack of education, or that they haven't yet educated themselves, or people haven't just kind of made it easy for them to understand or explain.
I just think they don't want to be honest with you.
Some don't. You're right. Some don't. Yeah. But some seem to be, it just becomes a slagging match basically. And, yeah. And it shouldn't, it needs to be a lot more fair, but both sides suddenly start shouting at each other and you're like, well, this is going to go nowhere. I see it quite often in my own comments between, you know, different followers and I'm just tagged in it. And it's like, oh, great. But I do see that there's a much wider, younger audience that has been becoming interested in F1 through different means. And I think, you know, we talk about like Lando and like doing the Twitch streams and Charles doing the same and Albon, like there's this new generation that all seem to get on well, that are all like have been in really good moods, really entertaining to follow throughout lockdown. And they've brought in to their world somehow this new younger generation that I think through a platform, something like Twitch and streaming and gaming, where I'd like to think it is probably more diverse. But then they've latched onto them, and then these are the guys that are then still making a really good stand, that are really that are saying the right things in my view, and have got the right opinions or certainly the right outlook in terms of what they want to do, and they're being brave and saying things. They're not shirking responsibility, which I could totally understand at their age that they might do, just keep their heads down and worry about the driving, which some people tell them to do. But yeah, I tell you, watch yesterday and. I don't think Charles Leclerc and Lando Norris need to worry about their driving, do they? The way they've gone about it has really impressed me. And I think that means that the people that have an affinity with them are going to be like, oh, yeah, they're making the right noises in there. So if there's anything in the sport that maybe meant that they didn't feel included, that's going to be outweighed by the fact that the people that they really associate with are making them feel even more included and they're taking them into that sport. So I think that's where we've really got to give them some praise. It's far from perfect yet. A lot more can be done. A lot more needs to be done. This doesn't get fixed overnight, and it can't be a discussion that ends in 2 or 3 weeks. The only way it's okay for it to end is if it's because it's become so normal that the work's ongoing that it's almost like, well, you don't need to keep saying every 2 days, yeah, we've got this program and this person's in it. Like, as long as things are tangibly happening, and that's the only time it's going to be okay that it goes a little bit quieter. But I am a little bit worried that might happen. After the first 2-3 races, you know, we've just had this peak and this whole, all the eyes on the front of the grid at the first race.
Yeah.
I don't think people are right now thinking, are they going to do it again next Sunday? And they're probably not. I imagine they're going to focus on the racing a bit more, but yeah. There needs to be some momentum that is continued. And I do feel like we've got a generation of drivers that are going to help that happen.
Yeah, it's a longer term thing. It's like, this is not something that has just come about. I think it's going to take, you know, generations to be able to, you know, get things more equal. Maybe that never will happen, but that's all people are asking for. And what I probably would suggest to you know, and actually I just want to thank you in particular, you know, obviously you're the first journalist I've had a conversation about this, and the fact that you're so well informed and actually, you know, willing to be able to learn and actually process and accept a lot of these privileges that you've had, you know, it means a lot. And this is the type of thing that we have to have, just open discussions. I think personally, what people should actually do is not, if you're going to put anything out or put any posts out that actually calls for equality, is actually take off comments. Because what you do is that it gives air to those idiots who want to say all lives matter or get on with the races or not again. So it's just like the effort that you're taking to be able to make comments like that. Because I've already said, I really don't care. I don't want those people to actually watch our particular show. We're not interested in them. They're not welcomed. Because I don't want to give any of those type of Trumpian type of views any air. You know, because it's just like, at the end of the day, is that if you want to just watch the race, you can watch the race. And everything that's going on is not political. It's human rights. You know, it's a bigger thing than that. But so yeah, thank you in particular.
Oh no, I appreciate it, mate. I hope I can somehow at least make it more inclusive, because I'm very aware it's easy for me to sit here and just say stuff, and if I'm not actively doing something. But also, if we do make it a little bit more equal and there's more opportunities for people, then the way I look at it is hopefully in 5 years or so, I've got people taking my work off me, and you know, there's more. There's a wider spread of journalists that are very good at what they do that are going to be coming in that hopefully are from different backgrounds, And it might cost me work, but I tell you what, I want to be beating the best of the best to get my jobs as well. So it's easy for me to say now. I totally appreciate that because I haven't lost any yet on that basis. But if I do, I still would say the same, that it's all on me to do the best job I can do. And it should be that is equally matched by someone else who's had the same opportunities. And at the moment, that's not happening. So I fully appreciate it needs to change. And I hope just by giving voices to the people that really matter, realistically, you know, we talk about the drivers and some of the big names and the fans that they bring in, by giving them their voices, hopefully and fairly, because this weekend, certainly some people didn't fairly give them it at all, then we can help with the process.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I echo Dre's comments of thank you for just using your platform to air those thoughts. So Dre's mentioned it before, and you know, we're big fans, but Drive to Survive. You were a big part of the first series. We're massive fans. It's the perfect like season opener when, you know, I watched the second season in March and I was ready to go, and then obviously it was canned, but it always does well, you know, the start of the season, getting us hyped up for the race. How did you get involved? Where did that come about, and did you enjoy it? What did you get up to?
Yeah, I loved it. It was a bit strange, actually. So it was Melbourne 2018, it would have been. I think that's right. I got approached basically from James Allen, who actually works at Motorsport Network now. And
yeah,
used to
we
be
had
there.
Him on the show.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, we had him on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so James came up to me in Melbourne and went, he'd been introduced to some of the Netflix lot and had been told they were looking for journalists that were going to be sort of at every race and that were part of the paddock that would help them out, basically, and give them some context. And the first way we started doing it was there was three of us that they picked out, and they wanted us to sit around and talk during a race weekend, and they would just record us. So we'd go somewhere quiet and just chat about what's been going on. And it was so awkward and so staged. and they worked out very quickly after like two races at it. It was myself, someone called Rosanna Tennant, who works for Formula One and Mercedes, and Michael Schmidt, a German journalist. And I think they were just trying to get like a nice kind of wide spectrum of the media centre. And which, as you know, as we could talk about, it's not the most diverse place. There's not that many female journalists. There's not that many ethnic minorities in there. And so they were trying to get, I think, all ages, and it just didn't click, basically. So they very quickly were like, well, that's not going to work, but asked me to go in. And I think it was London was the first one. I might have done it at a race, but just to go and sit and answer some questions, just to help fill in some gaps, basically, or if they can weave it together that way, because they wanted to avoid using, a bit like in Senna, where you never see a talking head. They wanted to avoid that. But they eventually had to say, we're going to have to do something a bit more similar, because there's a lot that needs explaining in this sport for people that aren't going to understand it. So, I went into a studio in central London and sat and answered questions for an hour or two. They gave me a cup of tea and a coffee, or a bit of food if I wanted it. And I just sat there and answered their questions. And that was it. It just kept going like that, really. So, it was a lot of fun. I kind of introduced them to certain people and helped them if they needed to know anything when they're on the ground, and it kind of just snowballed from there. And you never really knew it was going to be so big. Did think, you know, it's a Netflix production, so it was a cool thing to say you were doing, and you thought it'll do okay. I wasn't thinking it was going to be tiny, but at the same time, you're not like, oh, this is going to be a huge cult thing. I actually thought a lot of people would be unhappy with that style of series that F1 would do, that they'd say, oh, it's just dramatize the sport and all this sort of thing. It built and built, and we got to November, December time, and they were trying to finish the edits, and you realized then they'd worked out then they'd gone through a whole season, they knew what they wanted to make it, and they needed to change essentially what you'd given them, because while at the time it had been great, their final edit, they maybe only had 15 seconds when you'd given them, as you can tell, I waffle, so 45 seconds of answer or whatever. And so we came back in and did a load of re-recording, which was all with my own words. And a lot of the time was still natural and off the cuff, but a few times was that you said this, can you say it? But can you say it a little bit quicker and a little bit more succinctly? And that was it. Like it all got thrown together pretty quickly. And yeah, I remember being on the plane to Melbourne. I downloaded it all for that. It had been out for a few days. A few people said it looked cool. And watched it all, and I was like, it's nice. I didn't like seeing myself on telly. I never do.
Nah, it's weird. I don't like watching this. Yeah, I don't like watching this.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell other people to watch it, but I'll be like, I'm not watching it back. I watched the bits for you too. They're the good bits. But yeah, then I was getting messages from people within the paddock. Obviously, everyone watched it because they wanted to know if they were in it or what was said about them and that sort of thing. And yeah, it really boosted my sort of level, I guess, reputation or whatever. But as soon as I then went in, like Christian Horner was like, oh, here he is, and would start picking up things I'd said. But jokingly, fortunately, I never actually wound anyone up because, as Andrew and I were talking about beforehand, my role was quite explanatory in that. Yeah. But then, yeah, I got a TV deal off the back of it where obviously you're suddenly a much more recognisable face within F1 and they want someone to explain things to a fairly new emerging market. So I managed to get this NBC work off the back of that as well, and it did lead to other things. So that was very cool. Because it's an unpaid thing, everyone who's involved in that. I don't know about drivers, if they got certain like royalties or bonuses for certain things, but everyone else, you're helping promote the sport. So you can't really go demanding money for it. But yeah, it was good fun to do. Really good fun to do.
I really, as I was saying off air, I really liked your parts because obviously from people who are, you know, new to the sport or not hardcore, you know, petrol heads, you know, you really helped explain things and talked about the rivalries, the gossip and all these things. And you actually made it more, far, far more interesting. So here's, I'll be waiting for your next time you'll be on the show, fingers crossed, in the future.
Yeah, we'll see. It's because I wasn't in the second one because they used a lot more the drivers, which was completely understandable. Where one, I'd explained a lot of the basics, but two, if they could, the drivers then bought into it a lot more because they'd seen the first series and it had banged and they were like, yeah, we want to be part of this. So they could get them to do more for them. They could get them to sit down and explain things for them. And it still is better coming from, you know, if Daniel Ricciardo tells you what happens on a Saturday or I tell you, who do you really want to listen to? So, I didn't
Chris,
mind that too much, but right answer. but it was still the money's in the post. It was cool to do, but I also, you know, understood why I wasn't in the second one. But at the same time, I thought they'd refresh it as well in terms of who's in it. So I don't know if I'll be back on it as a talking head at any point. But really,
well, we're campaigning for that. It's a must. It's a must because the first, I enjoyed the first season, you know, way, way more. You know, unless they're going to put me in it, which is,
I will work on that. I'll have a
look. just walking by really slowly, like, or something like that, you know.
It's funny because, like, so my mum will still message me. She sees me in the background of a Sky Sports shot on the grid or something. You know, I'm there doing exactly the same job to a much bigger audience, actually, in the Middle East. But obviously my mum can't watch that. And instead of being like, oh, cool, like, how did yours go? She'll message me while I'm working with like a blurry screenshot of, look, it's you in the background. But everyone in F1 still does that. Like, so every journalist will have watched and every team member will have watched Drive to Survive and been going, oh, I'm in this bit, or oh, there I am in the background, like the press officers, like when they're doing something, all of it, because it's in, you know, the, like we were talking about earlier, long, hard days, not always actually at the track times where you're like, oh, great. But people also aren't there to document what you do, totally understandably. But it is a world where there's a lot of celebrity and interest, and you see it. And there's sometimes you're like, oh, it'd be great if, you know, I had this really cool moment and I wish someone had captured that for me. Well, Drive to Survive actually does it every now and then. And these guys suddenly get some of their cool moments of their job captured and they love it. So, I think it's been a great thing for the sport, actually. And hopefully they can just keep it fresh so that we keep going. But I know they've been working hard on season 3 already.
Well, they've got a lot of content this time.
Yeah, they were with the teams before. They were the first people to be getting tested regularly when we talked about that earlier. Oh. It was Netflix. So they could go to the teams and show them like starting up again and all that sort of stuff. So that's going to be a hell of a series next year.
Well, you know, so tell us about your own podcast. Now we've been speaking about your superstardom, your being a Hollywood star, so forth. So tell us about your podcast.
Well, I've picked a bad time to talk about it because I haven't done it for a couple of weeks now, but in lockdown, basically. I know. In lockdown, I was kind of like, well, I've got the time. I kept thinking I wanted to do one. I had a couple of mates that don't work in F1 that just listened to other sporting podcasts, and they said, you should do one. And I'm like, no, there's a bunch out there already. And there actually wasn't that many at the time, but there was enough in my eyes. I was like, there's some very cool ones, as we can see. So I was like, well, I... Um, and I get that money that I posted to you
back. I was going to be like, oh, shucks. we started with a compliment. We was like...
oh, there's plenty more, don't worry. But yeah, so I was like, okay, maybe I should do one at some point. And I just never found the time. And obviously lockdown had the time. So I went for it. And it was acceptable, I felt then as well, the way I did it. You know, it wasn't the best quality. It was pretty relaxed. It was called, I called it the podcast. It's not a podcast because the first three episodes were just me and mates that work in F1. So it was Nate Saunders first, who works for ESPN. He replaced me when I left ESPN. Lawrence Barreto, who works for Formula One, and James Moyer, who's a photographer, all really good friends. So it was just, let's get a drink, record. I put on Twitter or Reddit, you know, send in some questions for us to chat about, and we'll chat about it. And it was quite nice, but I was like, it's not meant to be a planned podcast or anything like that, or telling one person's story. It was meant to just be a chat. The third one with James Moy turned into telling his story a bit more because loads of people have photography questions, and it was really popular, which is very cool. And then off the back of that, I got an opportunity to, I asked for an interview with Pierre Gasly during lockdown. And got it and kind of said, oh, do you mind if I record it? I could do it this way. And they were like, he was more than happy to. So we did this relaxed podcast with him. And then you started chasing drivers and stuff. And it quickly just turned from messing around podcast that's not a podcast to a much more normal, you know, we try to make it lighthearted and fun with fan questions all the time. It was all led by fans. And some really weird questions like, what's your favorite door? Which keeps popping up. But I used different people within the sport. And then as we've got back to racing, those people don't have the time anymore. Or, you know, they do, their media time suddenly gets focused on what they have to do, which is the people that pay the big money, the TV companies, the radio companies. I have to, my work's ramped up, more clients and stuff, definitely on the road, haven't had the time really. This would be the time I do one basically, but yours is better than mine. So I thought, come on here instead.
Ah, you got another one in there. I'm turning a light rouge.
Now I don't have to, now I can't just return your money. I got to pay more.
I told you I can't make money out of this stuff.
But to be fair, I think I listen to a podcast and mate, you've had much better, you've had amazing people on there. I literally just finished listening to the Ross Brawn one, which was a good one, very explanatory. It's a weird time. Like, we started our podcast back in March, and we started it with the intention of, like, we started at the same time as the season. Mm-hmm. So our intention was that we were going to sit in a room, talk about the race and all this kind of stuff, and actually it's now very much segued from being a show about racing to being, we were always going to give an alternative view on the race. Now we're just giving an alternative view on the lifestyle of F1, and actually the same as what you said, it's transformed from what you had originally intended it to be to what it is now. And actually ours works pretty well, I think. I mean, you know, we're not the best out there, but, you know, we get by, and I think we're pretty, you know, we're doing all right. And I think it's just like, if you can have a pretty decent chat and actually just talk to some decent guests and kind of, and look into the back and give people, because I mean, our audience, we, like, who we want to attract is that, the, you know, the younger people that are just getting in, you know, we're basically three fans that want to chat about F1. And we get to interview some pretty sick people like yourself, like Ben, like James Allen. And we're just like, we're lucky at this and we're going to keep going. So,
and that money back again.
I'm clever, you see me.
I like the way I did that.
One final question, and I'm going to ask this because I basically want to put Dre on the spot. Dre wants Vettel to go to Mercedes. I keep telling him it's not going to happen. I want your opinion and whether you think it will happen, and if not, where do you want to see him go other than retirement? I mean, he might happen, but we don't want to see him go. But
so, I'm sorry, Dre.
Oh, really, come on!
Really don't see it happening.
Come on!
I've been wrong before. I'm usually wrong, to be fair, but I don't see it happening. I don't see why Mercedes would rock that boat. They had the chance before with, like, Daniel Ricciardo if they wanted to. I think as long as Bottas beat Lewis to pole and won that race, and okay, you could say Lewis was quick in the race, but you've got to get yourself on pole to win it. And it just, you know, he just did a slightly better job a weekend. Like, Bottas is still a damn good driver that doesn't rock the boat, but does make sure Merck win when Lewis doesn't win. And that's all they need. So I think he stays. And he can't be the most expensive driver out there. I imagine Vettel would cost more. I think Ricciardo would have cost more if they went for him, but they turned him down previously, and obviously he's gone to McLaren now. So I just don't see them changing what they've got. And if they ever do, I think they'll justify the money they put behind either Ocon or Russell. And right now, I think probably Russell. Actually, I just think that the momentum he was building. Ocon could have a great year and get back ahead of him. But I think Russell's timing might be a little bit better that might get him in there. So, yeah, I don't see it for Seb at Mercedes. So then I'd like to see him at Racing Point / Aston Martin when it becomes Aston Martin. I think it would be quite cool to see him at a different team. But the problem is, Stroll isn't going to get rid of his son, who still is young and, to me, worthy of a place on the grid, actually. Like, he's not at Perez's level. He's not, you probably wouldn't put him in the top 15 of raw pace, but he's still one of, at his age, the way he dominated the S3 Championship, the way he's shown he can qualify in the front row in the wet at Monza, the way he picked up a podium in Baku, and it's crazy at a young age. He's still got so much development time ahead of him. I'm like, yeah, he could certainly be someone that we see getting podiums and even wins in the right car in the future. So I think they will stick with him because it's not running someone who's massively off the pace. It is someone who's got the potential to actually get to Perez's level. And Perez is on a long-term contract. So I struggle to see that they'll fit him in. Don't see him going to Renault because from everything you hear and I understand, I think this week we're going to see another old boy come back in there, which could be fun. But Alonso. I think Wednesday sounds like it sounds like Wednesday could be a big day for that.
Exclusive.
Other people have started.
Let's put this out now. Don't even edit it. Just put it out raw.
Go live.
Well, don't leave it till Wednesday because then when you do and I'm wrong, I'll look even more stupid. A lot of whispers that's going to happen in this week, which would be very interesting. But yeah, so that would close that door off as well. And I just don't see anywhere else being competitive enough for Seb. So I think it's got to be really the Aston Martin seat. I don't see Red Bull going back for him. They don't need to. They've got Max. They've got talented young drivers still. And they've got more coming through. There's some good guys that I think Liam Lawson had a win at the weekend in F3, who's one of their juniors. So yeah, they're fine. They don't need to take him back. The doors are closing for Seb, really. That's why I mentioned the Aston Martin thing, is I hope somehow that becomes an option. Because I don't really see many others for him, and I don't want him to retire because it doesn't sound like he wants to.
It's too early. Yeah, it's too early now. Here's my pitch. This is the reason why I'm thinking. This is right. Mercedes are always going to be in contention, if not favourites to win. This is a legacy thing. I think that you having a chance to be able to have pretty much at the moment two of the best all-time drivers ever. At the same time, at their peak, driving together and racing against each other. This is, I think, for someone like Toto, that's why he hasn't just shut it down as yet. This is interesting to him because it's something that is, like, if you're a racing fan, you want this to happen. You want him to be in a team like this. You want him to have the same car as Lewis because they get along really well as well. And to have them competing where there's no number two driver or anything like that. It's two of the best drivers of all time in the best cars, same cars, driving and racing against each other. I think that for the sport, this is like Real Madrid getting, Zidane and Figo and Ronaldo, Beckham, so forth. Like, they are the Galacticos. So I'm hoping Toto is listening because please make this happen. So I wouldn't say this in person because Toto is far bigger than me and he scared me the last time I asked for a selfie. So I wouldn't dare ask for this. But on this podcast, I will ask for it. Come on, let's make this happen. And ignore Chris, and ignore Sam, and ignore Matt.
So it's not that I don't want it to happen. I'll put it that way. You're right. It'd be mega to watch.
I sold it to
him. It would be mega. But I also do wonder, like, there is now a question mark over Seb. And if you were considering that move, I'd leave it till very late in the year. Because I'd want to see what he does and how he performs. Because based on the way it went for him on Sunday as well, like, he hasn't started this year in the best form either.
He's just too eager.
Well, yeah, it was a strange move, put it that way. But Charles has hit the ground running again. And if Charles blows him away this year, I'm not sure he will, but he could. And if he does, then I think that actually might be the writing on the wall for Vettel getting a frontline seat next. I think he'd need to go somewhere else and have a reset that showed he's still got it and capable at the very least of, because he's still young, so capable of just getting himself back to that level that we know he does have. But if you consistently aren't hitting it, people aren't going to put their faith in you. So,
yes, please, yeah, I think that's another question, Seb, Mike. Stop crashing, please, or stop doing silly things. Just steady. We need this to happen. I'm rooting for you. You know, and I wouldn't be your first socially distanced interview when you move over to Mercedes. That, you know, I want that to happen.
Well, right now, him and Lewis are in motorhomes basically next to each other at the circuit. So maybe like Lewis can sort of,
you see,
have a word with him.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Putting it in the air.
Toto's there too, actually. Toto's exactly. Got motorhome there too. So it's starting.
See? But Chris, thank you so much. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure, you know, talking to you.
Getting
to pick your brain. And I'm hoping you had a good time.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. I've absolutely loved it. Thanks, guys.
We paid him to say that as well. Sam, thank you again, obviously, for being a co-pilot. Appreciate you. And thank you guys for everything you said about the, you know, again, about the movement. You know, it just means a lot to people like me who are just racing fans, just like everyone else, who just want to be included the same way that everyone else is. And I appreciate that you guys have, you know, all that you say and all the things you do and all the things you think. I really do appreciate that.
Well, hopefully next time I'm on this, we don't even have to talk about it. You don't have to thank us because it's not a topic anymore and we've made it a lot better. But yeah, I'd say you're welcome, but I don't think it's a thing that any of us are doing for thanks. And I'm sure you'd agree as well. It's not. It's just something that needs to change and improve. So hopefully we can get there.
So, you know, guys, you know, thank you for watching and listening as you guys are supporting us. We really appreciate you letting us do what we love. If you like it, please like it. And if you love it, please subscribe. And all the links are down below. You can find Chris, and tell me if I'm wrong, Chris, at Chris Medlin Chris Medlin F1?
It is, yeah, on both Twitter and Instagram. I have like a personal Instagram account because I'm one of those idiots. That's just at Chris Medley.
Oh, perfect. Right, we're expecting a follow then as well, definitely.
I need all the followers I can get.
All right, thanks again, guys. Thanks, I really appreciate your time. Peace.
Yeah, it was weird. Like traveling here was really strange. I barely left the same house for 12 weeks and then suddenly it was get yourself to an airport. So I got a lift there, that was fine. But then you get to the airport and the checks are weird, the queues are weird, everything's shut. And it just all took so long. Everyone's like staying 2 meters apart and things. And it was like, okay, this is very, very strange, like a ghost town. And then there was two flights leaving Heathrow when I was coming out. It was 9 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. And they were both scheduled to go from gates next to each other. And they were both full. So you had only two flights worth of people in the whole terminal. So it was nice and easy, evenly spaced out. And then suddenly they were crammed together. And you just get on the plane as if nothing's different. You have to wear your face mask the whole time, but you're crammed in. It just feels very strange. So yeah, that was interesting. It was good. Flew to Munich first to come here. Wasn't intentional, but the flight before got cancelled the day before.
this is not something that has just come about. I think it's going to take, you know, generations to be able to, you know, get things more equal. Maybe that never will happen, but that's all people are asking for. And what I probably would suggest to you know, and actually I just want to thank you in particular, you know, obviously you're the first journalist I've had a conversation about this, and the fact that you're so well informed and actually, you know, willing to be able to learn and actually process and accept a lot of these privileges that you've had, you know, it, honestly, it means a lot. And this is the type of thing that we have to have, just open discussions. I think personally, what people should actually do is not, when you if you're going to put anything out or put any posts out that actually calls for equality, is actually take off comments. Because what you do is that it gives air to those idiots who want to say all lives matter or get on with the racism or not again. So it's just like the effort that you're taking to be able to make comments like that. Because what I've already said, I really don't care. If I don't want those people to actually watch our particular show. We're not interested in them. They're not welcomed, because I don't want to give any of those type of Trumpian type of views any air. You know, because it's just like the end of the day is that if you want to just watch the race, you can watch the race, and it everything that's going on is not political. It's human rights. You know, it's a bigger thing than that. But so thank you in particular.
I appreciate it, mate. I hope I can somehow at least make it more inclusive, because I'm very aware it's easy for me to sit here and just say stuff, and if I'm not actively doing something, but also if we do make it a little bit more equal and there's more opportunities for people, then the way I look at it is hopefully in 5 years or so, I've got people taking my work off me, and you know, there's more, there's a wider spread of journalists that are very good at what they do that are going to be coming in that hopefully are from different backgrounds. And it might cost me work, but I tell you what, I want to be beating the best of the best to get my jobs as well. So it's easy for me to say now. I totally appreciate that, because I haven't lost any yet on that basis. But if I do, I still would say the same, that it's all on me to do the best job I can do. And it should be that is equally matched by someone else who's had the same opportunities, and at the moment that's not happening. So I fully appreciate it needs to change, and I hope just by giving voices to the people that really matter, realistically, you know, we talk about the drivers and some of the big names and the fans that they bring in, by giving them their voices, hopefully and fairly, because this weekend certainly some people didn't fairly give them it at all, then we can help with the process.